This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: anger boiling in the Muslim world over a new act of desecration against the Holy Quran in Sweden. Setbacks for the UK ruling Conservative Party as it loses more seats in new by-elections. And US confirms that Ukraine is using American-supplied cluster bombs against Russian forces. Hello and welcome, everybody. Iranians from all walks of life have held demonstrations across the country to protest sacrilege of the Holy Quran in Sweden. The protesters poured into the streets of different Iranian cities after Friday prayers. They voiced support for Islamic sanctities. They also condemned Swedish police for granting permission to a new act of desecration against the Quran. Similar rallies were held in the capital cities of Pakistan and Lebanon as well. Meanwhile, the renowned Egyptian university Al-Azhar has called for boycotting Swedish products to protest the desecration of Quran. Several Muslim states, including Iran, have summoned Swedish envoys as well. On Thursday, Iraq ordered the Swedish ambassador to leave its soil and recalled Iraqi envoy. The same day, Iraqi protesters stormed the Swedish embassy to show their anger at the desecration of the Holy Quran. Earlier in our news review program, we discussed the desecration of the Holy Quran as well as a chorus of condemnation from across the Muslim world over the insult. Let's listen to what our guests had to say.
Joining us for more on that is Saad al-Mutallabi, a former political advisor to the Iraqi government from the capital, Iraqi capital, Baghdad. And we also have Rina Rabai, a human rights activist from Beirut. So, Mr. Mutallabi, if I could start with you, what's your opinion on all this? Iraq has taken a major step by expelling the Swedish ambassador and from its soil. The coordination framework, the coalition of political parties with the largest parliamentary majority, said it was very encouraged by the move. We've also heard very powerful statements from the Hashd al-Sha'bi as well as Sunni organizations as well.
Yes, thank you very much. There is a consensus here in Iraq that the action of the justice system in Sweden by allowing the desecration of the Quran al-Karim for the third time cannot be ignored. Therefore, the foreign minister ordered the Iraqi charge d'affair to leave Stockholm for consultation here in Baghdad and asked the Swedish ambassador to leave. And yesterday I heard that she left Baghdad en route to Erbil, to Kurdistan. I don't know if she left Kurdistan or not, but she was last night in Kurdistan, in Erbil. And all other government or state organizations in Iraq the justice system, the parliamentarian system, the armed forces, the political parties, they've all aired their concern and their utmost anger at the Swedish government allowing the desecration of the Quran for the third time. They added to the insult in burning the Iraqi flag, which, as you know, the Iraqi flag has the word Allahu Akbar on it. So that's another insult to the sovereignty of the state of Iraq, and again to an insult to Islam. Allowing that in their country comes far away from the issues of freedom of speech. This is an attack on people's religions, attack on people's beliefs and their faith, and that is not allowed. That should not happen. All religions are respected. All religions should be allowed to practice their faith in peaceful coexistence without any insult directed to any of the world religions, where people can exercise their right of religion, right of faith, and a prayer at a complete safety and peacefully, and should not be subjected to any type of insult from any state-sponsored neo-Nazi, neo-nationalism that is taking place in Europe nowadays.
Okay, let me switch over to Rina Rebai, a human rights activist from Beirut. Now, Rina, where is the human rights of some around 2 billion Muslims when their most sacred book, the Holy Quran, is being burnt on a number of occasions?
Greetings to you. In the name of freedom of expression, the Swedish authorities claims that it allows profanation of the Holy Quran. And here I want to stress upon the word authorities, not the Swedish government only, but all the authorities, even the legislative authorities. If the Swedish laws does not criminalize such profane acts, the legislative authorities are also involved. If prosecutors do not prosecute such acts, then even the Swedish judiciary is involved. The Swedish authorities all know that this matter, profanating the Quran, does not fall within the framework of freedom of expression and definitely not human rights. And it does not need to be convinced of the opposite. The Swedish authorities have become an icon of discrimination, of profanity, disrespect, and intolerance. The Swedish authorities have proven that they do not understand or implement freedom of expression. So we, based on that, we strongly condemn Sweden's deliberate sponsorship of aggression and hate speech against Islam. What should happen is that only Sweden should be directed exactly. It should be economically and diplomatically boycotted. That's what should happen. And we definitely agree to what the General Secretary of Hezbollah said.
Okay, let me thank our guests. I'm afraid we have run out of time for their contribution. Saad Mutallabi is a former political advisor to the Iraqi government, joining us live from the Iraqi capital, Baghdad. Mr. Mutallabi, thank you very much indeed. And also Rina Rebai, a human rights activist from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Ms. Rebai, thank you for your thoughts and contribution. That brings an end to another edition of the News Review.
Ceremonies have been held across Iran to pay respect to Ali Asghar, the infant son of the third Shia Imam Hussein. Ali Asghar was the youngest person martyred during the Battle of Karbala 14 centuries ago. Women, many of them mothers with infants, have taken part in the ceremonies across Iran. They paid tribute to Ali Asghar, who was 6 months old when martyred by forces of then-tyrant Yazid. The mothers dressed their babies in special green and white clothes, an outfit set to resemble the clothing of Ali Asghar. Participants gathered in mosques and religious centers across Iran. The gatherings were part of ceremonies held during the first 10 days of the lunar calendar month of Muharram. The 10th day is called Ashura, that marks the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein. Meanwhile, Pakistan has held ceremonies to pay respect to the imam's son. Elsewhere, Britain's ruling party has lost two parliamentary seats in Thursday's by-elections regarded as a litmus test for the premiership of Rishi Sunak. Conservatives lost to the Liberal Democrats in Somerton and Frome, southwest England. Tories also lost their majority in the northern constituency of Selby and Anstey, where the opposition Labour Party won the seat, but the ruling party managed to retain its seat in a West London constituency. The seat was left empty after former Prime Minister Boris Johnson resigned as a Member of Parliament in June. The results of the three by-elections were announced as incumbent. Sunak is facing division within his party. The Tories have been facing growing public discontent over a series of scandals as well as high inflation. The United Nations has criticized controversial British legislation purportedly aimed at deterring thousands of refugees from landing on the country's shores. The UN warned that it will have profound consequences for people in need of international protection. The bill would outlaw asylum claims by all arrivals via the Channel and other so-called illegal routes. It would deport the refugees either to their country of origin or a third nation, such as Rwanda.
The United Nations has lashed out to the UK for its controversial immigration legislation, warning it could have profound consequences for the people in need of international protection. The UN refugee and human rights chief, Volker Turk, condemned the passage of the bill as a breach of international law and warned it would expose refugees to grave risks. He said the so-called illegal migration bill, which has been passed by the Parliament and now awaits the formality of the royal assent from King Charles III, is, quote, at variance with the country's obligations under international human rights and refugee law and will have profound consequences for the people in need of international protection. Turk also added that the bill would set a, quote, worrying precedent for dismantling asylum-related obligations that other countries, including in Europe, may be tempted to follow. The bill would outlaw asylum claims by all rivals via the Channel and other illegal routes and deport them either to their country of origin or a third nation such as Rwanda. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi also condemned the passage of the legislation as a breach of international law. This new legislation significantly erodes the legal framework that has protected so many.
But the problem with the government's bill from international law perspective is that it plans to abolish the right, and it's a very important right, of asylum seekers to apply in any country where they end up for asylum.
The plan to deport asylum seekers has been criticized by some opposition politicians, lawyers and civil rights groups as inhumane, cruel and ineffective. The Scottish Refugee Council, a charity that provides advice and services to refugees in the UK, said in a tweet that it's devastating to know the UK's illegal migration bill is now set to become law. Enver Solomon, the chief executive of the Refugee Council, has also criticized the law, saying the overall bill remains unworkable and will lead to human misery and huge cost to the taxpayer.
And so the government's got no plan. It's got a gimmick, which is the Rwanda scheme, a gimmick, which has already cost the taxpayer £140 million and nobody's been removed.
Prime Minister Sunak has insisted the Rwanda plan would have an important deterrent effect by showing that no one who arrives illegally in the UK will be allowed to stay. Britain struck an initial £140 million deal with the East African country last year. The first planned Rwanda deportation flight was blocked a year ago in a last-minute ruling by the European Court of Human Rights.
The Conservative government's flagship legislation will prevent most people from claiming asylum in the UK. The legislation is central to the Prime Minister's pledge to stop small boats crossing the English Channel. The government claims they will prevent people from claiming asylum in the UK if they arrive through an authorised means. Deportation flights to Rwanda are unlikely to start until next year at the earliest and will still hinge on a ruling by the Supreme Court on their legality later this year.
The deficiencies in the asylum system in Rwanda are such that there are substantial grounds for believing that there is a real risk that persons sent to Rwanda will be returned to their home countries, where they face persecution or other inhumane treatment when, in fact, they have a good claim for asylum. In that sense, Rwanda is a safe third country.
Britain struck an initial £140 million deal with Rwanda last year. The first planned Rwanda deportation flight was blocked a year ago in a last-minute ruling by the European Court of Human Rights. Last year, a record 45,755 people came to Britain in small boats across the Channel, mainly from France. More than 12,000 have arrived this year, a rate similar to 2022. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, who has vowed to stop the boats, has insisted the Rwanda plan would have an important deterrent effect by showing that no one who arrives illegally in the UK will be allowed to stay. Some analysts believe the Tories' insistence on the bill is partly due to the Conservative government's poor ratings in the polls. The governing Conservative Party has plummeted in the polls in recent years. As things stand, it's very unlikely they would win the next general election.
What can you ask me about? And it's a mess. You know, typical, the Tory government. Sorry, I got nothing good to say about them.
I think we need a change, but there's not really anybody that's suitable, I don't think, because they're all on the same ilk, all think the same. So, but we do need a change.
The Home Office Minister said the number of small boat arrivals had overwhelmed the UK's asylum system and was costing taxpayers £6 million a day to provide accommodation.
The U.S. has confirmed Ukraine is using Washington's cluster bombs against Russian forces, despite widespread concerns over the use of the weapons. The White House National Security spokesman said cluster munitions are in Ukrainian hands and are being deployed in the field as part of Ukraine's battle against Russia. John Kirby said Kiev is using cluster bombs effectively and they have an impact on Russian defensive formations and maneuvering. President Vladimir Putin has warned that Russia will take reciprocal action if Ukraine uses cluster bombs against its country's troops. Cluster munitions are banned by more than 100 countries. They release large numbers of smaller bomblets that can kill civilians indiscriminately over a wide area, even those cluster bombs that fail to explode and pose a threat for decades. That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight. In Britain, a new study has indicated that up to 3 million British people behind on their bills have had mental health problems. The new study has suggested that people with recent mental health issues are 3 times more likely to be behind on at least one key bill. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Up to 3 million people in the United Kingdom who are behind with at least one bill have experienced a mental health problem in the last 2 years, according to new research. YouGov polling for the Money and Mental Health Policy Institute charity found that 12% of all people were behind on at least one payment, such as energy, rent or credit cards, of whom half, or about 3 million, had a mental health problem. In all, people who have had mental health problems in the past 2 years are 3 times more likely to be behind on at least one significant bill, the report found, with 60% saying they felt unable to cope due to rising costs. Yet, only 9% have received money or debt advice since the start of the cost of living crisis. The charity Money and Mental Health Policy Institute calculates that the government could save more than £140 million a year and double recovery rates for people with depression and debt by joining up mental health and money support. It calls on the government and the National Health Service England to provide practical financial advice alongside National Health Service talking therapies. This would double recovery rates for people struggling with debt and depression, help an extra 27,000 people recover from mental health problems each year, and reduce waiting times for the mental health services. The authors of the new report calculate that these changes would save £39 million by reducing demand for health and social care services and generate £105 million in wider economic benefits and boost to workplace productivity, resulting in more people recovering from mental health problems. Martin Lewis, the chair and founder of the Money and Mental Health Policy Institute, said, "The cost of living crisis shows no sign of abating, and even if it does, the fallout will last for years. Financial problems and mental health issues are locked together. It's about time that treatments were linked too." For many years, therapists, mental health nurses and social workers have told us they often spend substantial, valuable clinical time helping people with their finances. It makes more sense to leave debt help professionals to do that and take some pressure off the National Health Service, letting clinicians focus on helping people get better. Rachel, a 46-year-old from Cardiff in Wales, has had depression most of her life, but when she tried to come off her medication, she went into a downward spiral of spending and gambling and ran up debts of about £15,000. "It's mad because the more debt you get in, the more the credit card companies will give you," she said. "At one point, I had about 10 different credit cards." She says at no point did any health professional ask her how she was coping financially, and she felt unable to raise it herself. Suzanne Hoddy, a 37-year-old nurse from Leicester, says no one considered whether she could handle her finances on discharge from a mental health setting in 2017. "Never at any point did anyone ask me, who's actually managing the house, all the bills? Is that going to be a potential issue when she gets home?" she said. "There was no thought of that. Had they done so earlier, Suzanne Hoddy might have avoided a court summons for failing to pay her council tax bill while an inpatient. Linking mental health and money services might mean an extra 5 minutes that you've had to spend with that person. But for that person's recovery, it's made a massive difference, she says. Dr. Subodh Dave, Dean of the Royal College of Psychiatrists, says psychiatrists were intensely aware of the significant impact of the cost of living crisis on patients' mental health. Dr. Subodh Dave said, debt may have disastrous consequences for individuals and their families. Clinicians can play their part by inquiring about their patient's financial situation and how this might be affecting their mental health status. Collaboration is needed from a range of other bodies, including financial advice services and social care organizations. A government spokesperson said, "We're investing £2.3 billion of extra funding a year by March of 2024 to expand and transform mental health services in England to treat an additional 2 million patients. We've also helped nearly 2 million people out of absolute poverty since 2010 and provided a £94 billion support package worth about £3,300 per household to help those most in need. The British newspaper The Financial Times has also covered the same story and tells us more. Employee assistance programs are usually pretty dull affairs. For a few decades now, employers have paid employee assistance program providers to run phone lines their employees can call if they need support with personal problems. The idea is to provide some short-term support, a handful of counselling sessions, say, to help staff deal with mild problems before they get worse. But this year, employee assistance programs have found themselves facing a swelling wave of complex mental health problems brought to them by people with nowhere else to turn. "We were never designed to be a crisis line," says Bertrand Stern-Gillett, who runs Health Assured, the biggest employee assistance program provider in the United Kingdom, with more than 80,000 clients. But he says high-risk calls have now become a daily occurrence, ranging from child or adult safeguarding concerns to someone who might have taken a significant amount of pills, or they might be standing on a bridge. The company is hiring more staff and managers to try to deal with a rising complexity and emotional intensity of the work. Andrew Kinder, head of mental health services at Optima Health, another employee assistance program, ran an online seminar about bereavement for the employees of one client. He expected about 40 attendees, but 1,200 people logged on. People were actually sharing quite a lot of experiences about what they've gone through, he says. Antidepressant usage is also on the rise. In 2021-2022, 8.3 million patients received at least one prescription item for antidepressant drugs in England, according to the data, 22% more than in 2015-2016. But what's going on? On the positive side, people have become more comfortable discussing their mental health status and asking for help. That's an improvement on the past, when we had this undercurrent of need that wasn't even being talked about, says Vicky Nash, head of policy at mental health charity Mind. But it's clear that's not the whole story. The loneliness, the worry, grief and financial problems caused by COVID-19 and associated lockdowns appear to have damaged the mental health of people all over the world.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on RIB English Radio with Sheikh Al-Musavi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers, sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program Bridge. We are looking at As-Sahifa Al-Sajjadiyya, Supplications of Al-Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn Zainul Abideen alayhi salam. And we are in the month of Muharram, the month of sorrow, the month of pain, the month of blood, the month of where the family of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam were massacred. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, he took the time to put some of these words and some of these concepts that happened in Karbala through his du'as. In the face value, it looks like a du'a that me and you recite when it comes to our problems. But if we look at it from a personal perspective of the imam, we can see now, actually there are more to these words than meets the eye. So supplication number 49. And verse 16 is where we started. So he says, فَكَمْ مِنْ عَدُوٍ إِنْ تَضَى عَلَيَّ سَيْفَ عَدَوَةٍ. And how many enemies have taken the swords of their enmity towards me? So we're saying, why would people rise up against the Ahlul Bayt and kill them? So we obviously, in order for you to have a full picture, you would literally need to listen to the other episodes that we had. But having said that, we will continue. One of the reasons that people fought the Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam, besides the ones we've already mentioned, is the propaganda of the time. There was such a massive propaganda and propaganda campaign against the Ahlul Bayt to an extent that people thought the Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam were literally non-Muslims, were pagans. Let's take a break. And we will discuss.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
A bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatu Sajjadiyyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana,
welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge. So the propaganda machine, which today is what we call the media back in the day of the Umayyad dynasty, it was based on trying to give a complete different image of the Ahlul Bayt to people. Now, you have to put yourself in the time frame of the Arabian Peninsula back in the day. So we're talking over 1,000 years ago, right? Now, back in the day, there was no internet, no TVs, no newspapers, no means of communication whatsoever. The only means of communication is post, which is a person that rides a horse or camel from one city to another to deliver a news or deliver letters. And from city to city takes at least, if we're talking about, let's say, you know, 100 kilometers difference between one city and another, that takes about at least 3 days, 3-4 days horse ride. Imagine if you have to deliver information from Medina to Damascus. That will take months. So people weren't aware of what's happening in Medina. People had no books back in the day or Wikipedias they can pick up and read and understand who the Ahlul Bayt were. The only means of information that people had back in the day was the preachers on the pulpits of the masajid. And these preachers were considered to be the media and TV and newspaper and everything that we have today. And these preachers are owned by the state, which means they are, just like the media today owned by some states, these preachers were owned by the government, the Umayyad dynasty. They say what pleases them. They say what is in their best interest. If anyone says the opposite, he'll be obviously dealt with severely, death. But the Ahl Bayt alayhim salam, they were living in Medina, and the people that see them are few. And the people that convey their news to Sham were few. And even when they do, they speak about the fada'il, the merits of the Ahl Bayt, these people get prosecuted, they get killed. So people were even afraid to say the merits of the Ahl Bayt in Sham. Until got to a stage where people could not name their kids under the names of the Ahl Bayt. If you were called Ali or Hassan or Hussein, you would be killed. So no one even dared to name their kids. So the media back in the day, the propaganda, played with the minds of people. Let us take a short break, and then we come back.
Listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge. So one of the reasons that led people to take their swords against the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam was the fact that the propaganda, the media at the time, was too strong. What the media did, it worked on different levels to manipulate and trying to trick people into believing them. One is destroying the image or the personal image of Imam al-Hussein alayhi as-salam. In the same way that Muawiyah, may Allah curse him, did with Imam Ali alayhi as-salam, Yazid did the same thing with Imam al-Hussein. Muawiyah's propaganda and his media campaign against Imam Ali was to make Imam Ali look like a barbaric Bedouin who does not know A from B from Z of the Islam. To the point he made Imam Ali sound as a person he does not pray or fast. To the point where Imam Ali was martyred in his masjid during Salah, and this news of him being killed and martyred during his Salah reached Sham. People of Sham said, "Hello, Imam Ali prays? Since when?" That's how much he worked on them. And which is the same thing that the media does today when they want to target a person or a group or a country, they make them sound as they are the worst. And that's why we have Islamophobia and Islamophobe, because of the media. You say you're a Muslim and everyone backs off. That's the media. Doesn't mean you're a bad person. They done that with Imam Ali alayhi salam. They made him sound so bad that he had no idea what salah was. He was just a barbaric person who just kills people. And they done the same thing with Imam Hussein. First, they have to break his image in the eyes of people. They're not going to make him sound as he's Sayyid al-Shuhada, the master of the martyrs, or Sayyid Shabab Ahl al-Jannah, the master of the youth of paradise. No, no, no. They're going to make him look like a person who just cares about his lust, he cares about indulging, he cares about his life, and he just wants to live as a king, and therefore he's opposing Yazid. Nothing else. It's just dunya, materialistic world for Imam Hussein. If this is the image they gave people, why would people even stay with the Imam alayhi salam? Why would they even fight with him? So that discouraged people from fighting with the Imam. Inshallah, we will continue in other episodes. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Al Musavi in the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را یا
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the United States, lawyers have argued that Jack Teixeira, a former Massachusetts Air National Guardsman accused of stealing and disseminating classified Pentagon records online, should be released ahead of trial, much like former President Donald Trump was released in his classified documents case. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. The former Massachusetts Air National Guardsman accused of stealing and disseminating classified Pentagon records online is asking a federal judge to set him free and reverse a previous ruling that he remain in pretrial detention. The filing draws a direct comparison to former President Donald Trump, who remains free pending trial for his alleged mishandling of classified documents. Attorneys representing Jack Teixeira on Monday, 17th of July, appealed the May detention order imposed by Magistrate Judge David Hennessy, asking the Massachusetts Federal District Court judge to reconsider Teixeira's release, arguing the defendant is not a flight risk, poses no risk of obstruction of justice, and can be released under certain conditions. A 21-year-old with a modest income who has never lived anywhere other than his parents' home does not have the means or capacity to flee from a nationally recognized prosecution. Mr. Teixeira has no real-world connections outside of Massachusetts, and he lacks the financial ability to sustain himself if he were to flee the country, the attorneys wrote on Monday, 17th of July. Even if Mr. Teixeira has shown any inclination to become an infamous fugitive, which he expressly has not, he simply has nowhere to go. Government prosecutors say Teixeira was behind the leak of government secrets about the United States' interests abroad, including detailed information about the war in Ukraine. Teixeira has been charged under the Espionage Act with unauthorized retention and transmission of national defense information and unauthorized removal and retention of classified documents. He has pleaded not guilty. Prosecutors argued the former military technology worker's previous access to classified materials posed a risk to national security and could present future dangers. But in arguing for his release, Teixeira's defense refutes the contention, writing, "The government seized electronic devices and conducted a thorough search of his mother and father's residences, which failed to produce any evidence demonstrating that a trove of top-secret information might still exist." Monday's filing notably compares Teixeira's case to that of Donald Trump, also charged with the illegal retention of national defense information. Donald Trump and his co-defendant, Walt Nota, remain free from pretrial detention after prosecutors in special counsel Jack Smith's office did not ask for any term of incarceration or electronic monitoring. The conditions of their release have been limited to avoiding discussing the case with one another and other witnesses. The government's disparate approach to pretrial release in these cases demonstrates that its argument for Mr. Teixeira's pretrial detention based on knowledge he allegedly retains is illusory, the defense's court filing said, listing other examples of similar cases as well. Jack Teixeira, unlike Donald Trump, is accused of transmitting classified information according to the indictment against him. While federal prosecutors allege in the indictment against him that Donald Trump showed classified documents to others on two occasions, the former president has not been accused of spreading classified information on a scale comparable to the allegations against Jack Teixeira. Donald Trump and Walt Nota have both pleaded not guilty. Teixeira's lawyers also argued that any forum on which he shared information, including the Discord group where they first surfaced, likely is no longer functioning. Mr. Teixeira does not pose a serious risk to national security because he lacks both the means and ideological desire to engage with a foreign adversary to harm the United States, the court filing argues, adding that Donald Trump also has access to very serious information and is not detained. Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story. A Massachusetts Air National Guard member accused of leaking secret military papers has challenged a judge's decision for him to remain behind bars, pointing to the pretrial release of former United States President Donald Trump and others charged in high-profile classified document cases. A magistrate judge ruled back in May that Jack Teixeira, a 21-year-old, must remain in custody while his case plays out. In his ruling, the judge found Jack Teixeira may pose a flight risk or obstruct justice. Teixeira's lawyers are now asking a different judge to reverse that decision. In court papers filed on Monday, 17th of July, the defense lawyers argued that Jack Teixeira has no financial ability or incentive to flee and claimed the government greatly over-exaggerates Mr. Teixeira's risk to national security. Teixeira's lawyers noted that prosecutors did not seek to detain Donald Trump or his co-defendant in the federal classified documents case, Walt Nota. even though the former president and his valet possess extraordinary means to flee the United States. Former President Donald Trump and the Trump Organization own properties in multiple foreign countries, and former President Trump has access to a private jet. Yet, the risk of flight posed by their knowledge of national security information and their abnormal ability to flee the country didn't even result in a request that either surrender their passport, Teixeira's lawyers wrote. They argued the disparate approach in these cases shows that the government's arguments for keeping Teixeira in detention are illusory. Both Jack Teixeira and Donald Trump have been charged under the Espionage Act. Teixeira pleaded not guilty last month to 6 counts of willful detention and transmission of national defense information. Each count is punishable by up to 10 years in prison. Donald Trump has also pleaded not guilty to dozens of felony counts accusing him of hoarding classified documents at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida and refusing government demands to give them back. While Donald Trump was not required to surrender his passport, with prosecutors saying he was not considered a flight risk, a judge directed the former president to not discuss the case with certain witnesses. Donald Trump has denied any wrongdoing and attacked the prosecution as politically motivated. Jack Teixeira has been behind bars since his April arrest on charges stemming from the most consequential intelligence leak in years. His lawyers have suggested he be released to his father and largely confined to his home with location monitoring and no access to the internet. Teixeira is accused of sharing classified military documents about the Russia-Ukraine war and other sensitive national security topics on Discord, a social media platform popular with online gamers. U.S. authorities say Teixeira, who enlisted in the Air National Guard in 2019, began sharing military secrets with other Discord users around January of 2023.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT5 and IntelSat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio. Oh.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Here at Hadith of the Day and IRIB English Radio, we would like to offer our condolences to our esteemed listeners on this most grave and solemn month, which is the month of Muharram, the month in which Imam Hussein alayhi salam was martyred on the plains of Karbala along with his companions and some of his family. As you know, Imam Hussein alayhi salam was the grandson of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and the successor of Imam Hassan alayhi salam, the third Imam of the family of the Prophet, and his many virtues have been related and transmitted regarding him. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at one of his virtues, which has been related. This virtue, in fact, has been transmitted from Imam Hussein alayhi salam himself. It goes back to an event that occurred when he was young, and it goes like this. Imam Hussein alayhi salam said, I visited the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam when Ubay ibn Ka'b was with him. The Prophet Muhammad was seated with Ubay ibn Ka'b, one of his companions, one of his sahabi. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam greeted me, saying, Welcome, O Aba Abdullah, O beauty of the heavens and the earth, Ya Zaina Samawate wal Aradin, O adornment, might be a better translation, O adornment and beauty of the heavens and the earth. So Ubay ibn Ka'b said the following, How is it possible, O Messenger of Allah, for anyone other than you to be the beauty of the heavens and the earth? This person kind of was confused. He said, Well, the Prophet's his stature is greater than Imam Hussein. Why would the Prophet address Imam Hussein alayhi salam using this designation when it really belonged to the Prophet? The Prophet, when he heard Ubay ibn Ka'b say this, he said the following, O Ubay, I swear by him who has rightfully sent me down as a messenger. Certainly the worth of Hussein ibn Ali is greater in the heavens than on the earth. And verily it is written about him, on the right side of the throne, lamp of guidance. This is a famous hadith which has been transmitted about the virtue of Imam Hussein. Misba'ul Huda. Imam Hussein is the lamp of guidance and the ark of salvation. Wasafinatu Nijatin. An imam, not weak, a source of dignity and pride, a landmark and a great treasure. Right? So the Prophet Muhammad, you know, he reiterated these virtues of Imam Hussein alayhi salam for Ubay ibn Ka'b. When Ubay ibn Ka'b, he objected to these. And all of these are, in fact, the reasons why. In fact, the reasons why Imam Hussein alayhi salam is the beauty of the heavens and the earth, because he has these virtues within him. He's a source of guidance for people. You know, obedience to him leads to the salvation of a person. He's an imam. He has strength, and he brings dignity, you know, both for the people, for his followers, and also, you know, the people who accept him and obey his command. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the virtues of Imam Hussein alayhi salam in his own words. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.
محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد.